Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jill, and I am an alcoholic. Yes. So, for those who would care to join us, we open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms directly across the hall. And it's up, go across a foyer and up a small flight of stairs. The women's room is on one side, the men on the other. At this time, ask that you silence your cell phone. Thank you, Robert. We also respectfully ask that those present refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum. I have a short attention span. Someone gets up and I go, I'm like a beagle after a rabbit. Everyone gives everyone a chance to listen uninterrupted. You know, just moving around kind of interrupts the things a little bit. This group practices a spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus precisely on how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on AA simple actions. I'll read the preamble now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversations and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're on step 12, part one. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to Abby, who has joined us tonight from Roosevelt Gardens.
My name's Abby. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. My sobriety date's April 1st, 2006, and I would like to thank the group for asking me to come share tonight. I guess we're going to start on page 89 if you have your book. I have my handy little guide here. So we're going to start with the paragraph that says practical experience. And it starts out, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Okay, so now I can shake everything out and just talk. Okay, so this is a really great reading for me right now. I can tell you right now that the bulk of my recovery has laid in working with other alcoholics throughout my sobriety and right now. When it says it works when other activities fail, this is basically telling me that other activities are going to fail. You know, just going to meetings, you know, I heard that constantly when I got sober. Meeting makers make it, meeting makers make it. And then I moved to this area and I heard the rest of it, which was meeting makers make it to meetings. And I remind, I take a meeting into the Norfolk City Jail, and I try to remind the women of that constantly, because they just kind of harp this chorus at me of what they're going to do when they get out, which is go to meetings. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I said. And it took me, you know, a couple more visits to the Porter County Jail before I actually got sober. So going to a lot of meetings is great, but that did not keep me sober. I drank a lot of coffee, smoked a lot of cigarettes, got to know a lot of people. Some of them were there when I finally came back, and a lot of them weren't. So that kind of proves it to me even more that just going to meetings is not enough. So lately, I have not been going to as many meetings. You know, this is complete honest hour. I've had an extremely difficult year. Just to generalize it, my husband, or my soon-to-be ex-husband, had relapsed, and walking through that with him was probably one of the most difficult things that I've gone through in sobriety of yet. And it was basically just survival mode that I was in, you know, just trying not to drink as I constantly watched him come in and out and in and out. And really the only thing that was keeping me going during that period of time was my sponsees and my sponsor and God. But really my sponsees, you know, the bond that I created with those women and the friends that I have in my life too, I should put that in the same category. I think when I think of helping others, I don't just think of that sponsor-sponsee relationship, you know, that transcends into, you know, the community of people that I have here. You know, I didn't run back to Indiana when things got bad because, you know, this is where my family is today. And I could not have gotten through it without the intensive work that I was doing with those people. So that first sentence and this first paragraph, you know, really, it makes my voice shake sitting up here because my practical experience shows me that, you know, the only thing that ensured my immunity from drinking was intensive work with other alcoholics. And I can remember, you know, some instances. My little sister lives here, and this is being recorded, but I think someday she may be joining us if she ever hears this, keeping her seat, the seats warm for her. And she was a good support, you know, as good as family can get, but she's not an alcoholic, you know, but she does know the power of this. And, you know, there were some instances in this past year when I just didn't think that I was going to be able to keep going, you know, and I thought I had every reason to just give up, you know, and she'd be the one that would say, no, I'm not going to take you out to the bars with me, you know, not even just to go and dance and meet boys, you know, I want you to call your sponsor, I want you to go to a meeting, I want you to call up one of your sponsees, you know, and she knows the power of this. And it always seemed to work that the lowest that I got, you know, when I was laying on my couch, like literally stuck there thinking I'm never going to leave this couch again, and knowing that a drink isn't going to solve this, but not knowing how I'm going to get through this, that's when my phone would ring, and one of those women would be having the problem of the year, which, you know, in spite of everything that was happening in my life, they would say, I know it sounds small, and I'm like, no, keep talking, let me hear this, you know, and that's the stuff that carried me through this. Intensive work with other alcoholics, and I don't always do this as intensively as I'm supposed to. Usually when life is really good, you know, I think, oh, well, I'll just mute the phone, they'll be fine, they can take care of themselves, you know, but I fall into the pattern of that, and then self-will jumps right back in. You know, when I'm available and I can show up for you, that's when I'm at my best. You know, the sponsees I have right now, they're all through the 12 steps, and there's nothing that helps me more than somebody that's brand spanking new, that has no concept of why they can't stop drinking. You know, and that is very needy, and that's calling me and calling me and calling me, and it feels like it's an annoyance, but it's the best possible thing for me. You know, and later in here it talks about explaining to us, you know, how important it is to sponsor, and that's the reason why. You know, and I tell people that from the beginning. You know, it's never irritating to me; it's always helpful to me. So please call. You know, and. I don't know what I would have done without them during this time. The second paragraph to me is really the 12-step promises, and that's the stuff that makes all of the bad times worth it, you know? My life has literally taken on a new meaning. When I first started sponsoring people, I didn't think that I'd be able to see the difference, that they'd make that big of an impact in my life, but that line that says, we know you will not want to miss it, I can think of like 10...
you know, 100 things off the top of my head that I've got to experience, you know, watching people graduate from high school, from college, you know, going through deaths, going through marriages, going through divorces, watching babies being born, you know, all of these life events that I was never able to show up for in my own family, I've shown up for people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that truly is the bright spot of my life today. You know, sometimes when, you know, I'll drift into normal land and I'll look at all the things that my friends are doing and, you know, my old friends are doing and thinking, what am I missing out on? You know, it's nothing compared to what I've gotten to experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they'll never understand the, you know, natural high of going to an assembly or a conference, you know, and coming back on Sunday exhausted, like ready to conk out, you know, at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but you're like buzzing on spirituality and recovery, and nobody else is going to get that the way that we do, you know. And, you know, when I read that paragraph, that's the stuff that no matter how bad things have gotten for me in the past year, I look back at the past 7, you know, and I know that there's so much more to come, you know, and there's so much more that I don't want to miss. And that's what makes me stick, you know. The 12-step is not just about helping other people. You know, I remember when I got here, I heard people always share about the two-step jig, you know, the first and the 12-step. You know, I'm sober, now I'm going to sponsor you. And that was kind of what I did that first year. But God bless those women. You know, we smoked a lot of cigarettes, read the big book. I don't really know that I was actually able to help any of them get sober. One girl actually is sober today, but that's not the important part. You know, the important part is I stayed sober, and it set up what my future was going to look like. You know, there's nothing like having my house full of drunks, you know, and sharing my life with them. So I'm just really grateful that this is the way that we get to start this out, that I can be honest and say this is where I'm at, and I don't know what I would do without that immunity from drinking. So I'm going to pass it to Jill.
Thank you. Yeah, when they talk about practical experience, it means that it makes sense, you know. And a lot of times, if I'm working with my sponsor, she'll see things in me that I could never catch on my own. Like when I'm ready to jump off a ledge somewhere, she'll say, "Come on, let's go do such and such." And I can remember I was a bad drunk. I drank for way longer than it even made sense to drink. And a lot of people didn't think I was going to make it. But my home group, before I could even make a decision on doing anything and applying anything, they made the suggestion for me to start going to visit someone in a nursing home, an alcoholic who was in a nursing home. And I was like, you know, being a hard-headed, kind of dead drunk, I go like, well, I don't know how that's going to help me, but, you know, it looks good, I'll just go do it. And what happens in this program is there's a power in Alcoholics Anonymous that can melt the heart of even the worst drunk. And if I'll take the actions to do this stuff, God does something inside that just starts untwisting this terrible wreck that I have made my life and myself. It starts untwisting it, shakes it out, and makes it become a little bit of service to other people. And then later on, when I really started getting my feet under me a little bit, I could start seeing where sometimes my just talking, or a lot of times it's just listening to another person, has almost a magical quality to it. Because it's like once a person can, it's not therapy. Don't ever get this confused that this is group therapy, because it's not. But when a person can talk, and I've worked in here long enough that I'll hear something, I'll ask the right question. Once in a while, I'll ask the right question, and then that will open a door to that person being able to say something that they'll walk away. You know, you can even see their steps a little bit lighter, their eyes a little bit brighter, and then they have something to stay sober for that day. Back when I was trying to get sober, this man said to me one time, he said, and he never called me by my name because I don't think he could remember it. He said, "Girl, you've got to find a reason to stay sober this one day at a time." And just saying something like that, it's like, you know, I couldn't think of any reasons at that time. And I actually could say that out loud. And he says, "Well, you got a house over your head, don't you?" I mean, they point out things that sound really silly and really sentimental. But yet, when another person says that to you, it gets my mind going just enough in a different direction that all of a sudden I want to live and I want to be sober today. And the sun's a little bit brighter. So it's kind of neat. Okay, we're going to go to page 91, and then I'm going to read this time, and then I'm going to pass it off to Abby. It says, see your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experience to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your own drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment about how this was accomplished. If he is a serious mood, dwell on the trouble liquor has caused him, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. These are probably the most succinct instructions anywhere in the book. And it tells you, if the person's in a dark mood, you can kind of come up with some of my own drinking. Because you can get a sense from a person after being with them for a short while, you know, what they might have been like as a drunk. And so I have told people things that I probably wouldn't tell people I work with, you know. And sometimes if the person is not communicative at all, not talking at all, you can ask kind of an open-ended question. You know, this is what I did. And I had a problem with this one, especially when I first started doing it. I did moralize. I did preach. I did drive people away. Valuable lesson. This is our experience that we're talking about here. So what happens is if a person looks like they're really kind of uncommunicative, I have to make a decision. Are they shy or are they just terrified? And I'm pretty good at recognizing terror. You know, you just don't look people in the eyes, you kind of duck and weave and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, it's almost like God tells you, it's like when you start doing this, you get a sixth sense of what should be said. And, you know, there's definitely a God consciousness in doing this. And I can't know it ahead of time. I used to try to practice these speeches about what I'd say, you know. And it falls flat when I do that. But if I listen, I get little clues as to what to do, what to say. And you know what this has done? They talk about practical experience. This is what opens me up, that when I'm around the people I work with, the people that I'm related to, I can start hearing them just by doing this in this program. You know, I don't think I had an ounce of empathy when I first got here. You know, I couldn't really connect with people. I was a sociopath, I guess you'd say. I guess that's the word for it. I did not play well with others. And I even got some report cards out this past year of just old things that were in a trunk. And I started looking at them and it said, doesn't play well with others. It was like in my report card. And I thought, well, damn, they knew before I did. I hadn't even drank then. But it makes me more connected and more whole the more I do this. And I take myself much less serious. Not all the time, though. Just when I'm actively doing this. But it's like the instructions say, give them a sketch your own drinking career. You know what that does, too? That brings my own drinking career right back at me. When I want to think it, romanticize it, and make it look like it was some kind of a fun trip down memory lane, I have to say, you know, being in a blackout and throwing up all over myself or waking up where I didn't belong, that brings it back more real. You know, this is what really happened. So there's a little honesty twist in all of this, which is important for a drunk like me. Thanks. Go ahead.
I think, like Jill said, I know when I go through the book with the girls I sponsor, you know, we look for the directions, you know, and like she had pointed out, this chapter really has direct directions. You know, there are some places in the book where you kind of have to twist it and say, okay, well, we're going to take the sentence, and from this sentence, we're going to do this. But, you know, there's no room for that here, you know, and like Jill, when I started out doing that two-step waltz, I wasn't paying any attention to any of the directions. You know, it was kind of like the title of a sponsor. You know, I couldn't wait to be the sponsor that was going to save your life. And I think that it was much more like a therapist than it was a sponsor, you know. And it was getting, you know, caught up in, you know, other people's problems, things that had absolutely nothing to do with our primary purpose, you know, which is just to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You know, I was the banker, the relationship expert, you know, pretty much everything. And that was from like, you know, 10 minutes in talking to you, you know? So this is important directions, I think, you know, in the initial approach, you know? And I know that I still see a lot of times the book kind of being shoved right at people right away. You know, and I always kind of cringe because I know when I first got here, that book terrified me. You know, I read through it a little bit, was not really willing to swallow the truths like laid out in black and white like that. But one of the first suggestions that were given to me were to read the stories in the back, you know. And I was really grateful for that suggestion because that I could understand. You know, I could go home and sit there, you know, in the privacy of my own house and have that, you know, gulp in my throat of, oh God, not only is there drinking like me, but their thinking is like me too. You know, and it wasn't so difficult to understand. So I'm really glad that I was approached in the same way that they describe here, because Alcoholics Anonymous didn't scare me. You know, I had this very cultish kind of understanding of what Alcoholics Anonymous was before I got here, and I wasn't approached with things like that. You know, I was approached with people that, you know, were interested in me and were kind to me, and people hadn't done that in a very long time. You know, and, you know, that when it says we first engage in general conversation, you know, when I spend some time getting to know a girl, if she wants to, if she asks me to sponsor her, you know, I want to go get a cup of coffee with you, you know, and know a little bit more about you. You know, it's not just a yes, ma'am. You know, I've done enough of the SARP, yes, I'll be your temporary contacts, never hear from you again, you know, and that was really disheartening at first. But I understand now, you know, and I will still pick up the phone for those women, but it is important that I get to know who and what you are. And when it comes to talking about our drinking, you know, like Jill described, you know, I have this ability now to be able to just kind of feel it out, you know, what kind of mood are you in? And I like what you talked about with the sketch of our drinking career up to the time we quit, because I'll sit down with somebody that I don't barely know, and they're telling some kind of story that I had forgotten about, you know, that like I've buried deep down in the realm of like, we don't talk about that unless necessary. And I don't know about you guys, but when I was new, I would tell you anything I did, you know, any kind of like weird, embarrassing things that I don't necessarily think about every day. But newcomers love to talk about that. So it really does bring to mind things that I haven't thought about in a really long time. And as far as turning to talk to some phase of our drinking, you know, one of the first things that I like to do is sit down and, you know, just kind of tell me your story. I'll tell you mine, you know. And in the next couple paragraphs that we're going to read here, it talks about matching our mental inconsistencies with each other's. And, you know, and it's not about whether I can relate to you if you have a college degree, if you have children, if you're the same age as me, you know, if you were a low bottom drunk, or, you know, you drank and you hid the bottles at home, taking care of your kids. Like, none of that stuff matters to me. But what matters to me is I'm sitting here listening to you talk about your drinking. You know, does it sound like what I felt, what I experienced? You know, and it's not my place to judge whether or not you're alcoholic, but it is my place to see, you know, my effectiveness. You know, I don't pick and choose who I sponsor for the most part. I believe that God puts people in my life just as they're supposed to, but I do need to get a general understanding of this person before I can, you know, take the time. So I think that that is a really important way to start this out. It does give a better idea of how you ought to proceed, you know, because sponsoring people, no two people are the same. You know, the directions are the same, you know, the process is the same, but the approach with every single one is different. Like, I don't have kids, but I understand when people say that they don't have a favorite kid, because I'm like, oh, of course you do. You know, like, I'm the favorite. I know that for my mom. But I finally get it now that, you know, each of the women I've sponsored throughout my sobriety are my favorite for one reason or another. You know, even the people that I'm like, oh, sitting down initially, I'm like, there's nothing that I can relate to with this woman, but I get how she feels, you know? And those people are the ones that teach me the most, you know? So I'll pass it back.
You want to read the next
Sure.
page?
Okay, page 91, I guess we're still there, starting with the paragraph, when he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads him to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. So this kind of describes, you know, if I look at this like piecemeal, I don't necessarily think that these directions are, you know, all in one sitting. I think that this is kind of loosely describing the process of going through this with another person. When it says show, you know, there's a lot of show too. There's a lot of times where they say show him the mental twist, show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink. So what that's telling me is when I'm going through this book, this book is not meant to be read to somebody, and that's it. You know, I don't sit there and read it, and, you know, when we first, you know, get into the directions part of the book, you know, I always tell the girls I sponsor, you know, we may read one paragraph, you know, and that may be it, and sometimes a paragraph will last us 2 hours, you know, and we started off at one thing, and we're all the way over here, you know, talking about something that happened when we were 7 years old and hadn't even had a drink yet, you know, but it's all a part of the process. And, you know, that's my understanding of what showing somebody how to do this looks like. You know, it's not just telling them, but it's going back through my life and literally giving all. I had a sponsor at one point that said, you know, when I'm done going through this with an alcoholic, you know, just the initial, not the initial meeting, anytime we meet, and I feel drained, that's generally a pretty good sign, you know, because I should be showing up and giving all that I can from it, you know. And I usually have to put a cap on reading the book at, like, you know, 1 to 2 hours, because after that, you know, it starts with a... but, you know, I'm going through my life and I'm giving this account in, you know, in distinct examples and saying, you know, when I read this sentence, this is what I think of. You know, what about you? You know, so that it's an interactive thing. Because I know when I first started going through the book like that, I was terrified. You know, I was like what you had described. You know, I couldn't look anybody in the eyes. I, you know, barely put a sentence together. So having that, like, prompting and having my sponsor describe to them, to me, you know, what that looked like for them made it a lot easier for the gears to start working in my head. And it made it free and comfortable for me to share back with them. So when I look at these two paragraphs, I think about the process as a whole, you know, that when it says, we suggest you do this as we have done it on the chapter on alcoholism, you know, that's my learning tool to, you know, be able to go back and forth with someone. And it does say, if you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. And although we can't obviously judge who's alcoholic and who's not, you know, this is where the book does tell me that, you know, if I don't generally get the feeling that you're clicking with me, I have had the experience where, you know, I've said, you know, maybe you need to talk to somebody else, you know, that has had more of the experiences. You know, I got sober when I was 19. I wasn't necessarily a low bottom drunk that was going through DTs and, you know, has gone to those lengths. Does it make me any less alcoholic? No. You know, but I don't understand some of those feelings. So, you know, there's been times where I've said, you know, maybe you should talk with someone else. But most of the time, as far as, like, judging whether someone's alcoholic or not, God's usually the one that sorts that out for me. I don't have to do anything, you know. I just have to show up for that person, be a friend, and, you know, it gets sorted out one way or the other. But I do know that I love that line that matching my mental inconsistencies with some of his own. Once I get to talking with another drunk, that's when that, like, magic takes over. And, you know, I'll say something like, I'm looking at one person in the room that I have this thing about, like, planning, like, that I'm really sick and dying of some kind of, like, terrible disease. And this has, like, happened to me my entire life where, you know, I'm constantly, like, planning my funeral and, like, who's going to show up. And, like, it's, like, a constant obsession. And I remember sharing it with this person, and they're like, oh my God, I do the exact same thing, you know, and like detail to detail. And I'm like, oh, this is what it's about. You know, it's that stuff that like you really don't want to tell other people. And, you know, as the magic starts to take over, you're like, so did you ever do this back in the day? and they get it, you know, right away. And that's the kind of stuff I think that hooked me to Alcoholics Anonymous, was that the stuff that I never was going to tell a single person. You know, even before I started putting pen to paper in the fourth step, you know, I was starting to slowly open up, you know, and that's the stuff that made me stick around here. And that's my job as a sponsor today, you know, is to just draw this stuff out of people. You know, it's not to force it or shake it. It's just to slowly kind of draw it out just by showing you who I am. So,
now. That was really the awesome part about it, because I can't tell anyone that they're alcoholic. I had to come to that conclusion myself, and I can remember calling my sponsor saying, I really am an alcoholic. She goes, yeah. Yeah, we do. But I didn't know. I just thought I still thought I was so different for a long time. And this is a process. It's not an event. This, and more becomes, becomes obvious the more you do this. And if I'm working with other people or talking with other alcoholics, it becomes more obvious, because it's really hard to keep that stuff inside and to keep lying to myself, oh, I didn't do that, because I thought the that's was the external that's. It's the internal ones. And when Abby was sharing about how she was always coming up with these tremendous illnesses and stuff, and I can remember I did, you know, I had cancer, so it's, you know, it's real that I had it, but I always thought it was coming back, and my sponsor caught on to it real quick. She goes, you just don't want to do this other stuff, that's all you're doing. I'd rather die than have to do something. And that's the sad part about it, because it's true. It's like, you know, why can't I have a major deadly disease I can just die from and get this over with? I'm getting better with that, though. But the whole thing is I'm really cheating someone. If someone doesn't believe they're an alcoholic, and I just keep working on them, trying to make them an alcoholic, I'm probably doing some damage. So it's like, you know, it's, if I can't help someone, I have to start doing a little inventory of my own. You're like, why am I doing this if I'm not helping this person? And I walk away so frantic and frustrated. You know, what am I doing? But that's not really what this is all about. But there's a question I have to ask in this process. If a person understands or does it identify with me, they'll understand it once. I'm not going to have to sell anyone anything. They'll understand, because I went through a lot of different things trying to get sober. The only thing that's kept a drink out of my hand for quite a while is Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I have to be honest about, because all this other recreation I did trying to get sober didn't work. You know, I kept drinking. So, you know, that's the part I have to bring to the table, is this stuff really does work. And in here, when it talks about, I have to let the other person do the talking, and unless it really is getting off track. If I'm just becoming a sounding board for somebody, you know, that's the other thing I have to say, bring it back to, yeah, let's talk about your drinking. You know, I know that that's bad. I know that's the worst job in the world. I know that's the worst husband, and that's the worst everything. But what about your drinking? You know, how did this tie in? So you can ask some questions, and I know that the people, my sponsor asked me questions that made me think afterwards. You know, I might blow it off at the moment, but she would ask me questions that I would think about afterwards. You're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? What is this about? So it's not that I'm brilliant and I have this great background of getting people sober. It's that someone took enough time to do this for me. And when someone's done that, it's like another gift you get in the program, that God gives you what you need to work with another person. And sometimes the working with another person is just being as honest as you can. When they talk about in here, dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. If it's not hopeless, why am I doing this, you know? If I didn't believe that I was hopeless and dying of alcoholism, then what is my motivation for doing the rest of this stuff? And I'm trying to make that clear, because I think sometimes if I have it lurking in the back of my mind, I'll do this for a while, but it really wasn't that bad. That's what's going to come across to people. You know, it's just going, I wasn't really dying. I was just kind of resting. I'd get my act together any day now, but I didn't. And literally, after I had gone to psychiatrists for way, way longer than I should have, and therapists and everyone else, I had been in AA before, and when I didn't know I was dying from this disease, I got back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful I did, but I even did that belligerently. So I try to focus on that it is fatal. It will kill you. And I've seen it in my own family, and I've seen it in the room since I've been here. But I also know you can't scare a drunk. I need to know it's fatal. I need to know that I could die from this disease. And so that's why I try to get across to people that when I'm talking to them, the fun stories are great, but that wasn't what got me in the rooms, you know. What got me in the rooms was I did know I was dying. And it says, but insists that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. And I always make that part of my story because I came to AA, and they talked about the book. You got this book. I said, well, I'm pretty smart. I'll take the book and go home and read it. And what really blew me away was when I realized I couldn't stay sober by myself. I got hung up around page 30, 31 in the book that tells you these are the ways we try to control our drinking. And I hadn't done some of them, so the book went on the shelf. So it's kind of a package deal. Thanks. Okay, we're going to move on down to page 92. And it says, it starts with, continue to speak of alcoholism as a disease, a fatal malady. Talk about the condition of the mind, of the body and the mind which accompanies it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of his alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better, even though your protege may not be and may not have entirely admitted his condition. He has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man is agnostic or atheist, be empathetic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. There's a lot in this one that the first part about alcoholism is a fatal malady. And you talk about the condition of the body and the mind. Because if I just had a condition of the body, the solution is just don't drink. Just stop drinking and you are going to be okay. But if I stop drinking, my mind tells me, you know, this is too much. I need a drink. I can't function with all the stress of my life. So my mind starts working before my body starts craving. It always does. So that made sense to me. And that's what people talked about in the rooms. And it's just, then you focus mainly on my personal experience with that. And I would talk about the many different ways I tried to stay sober. The things I did to swear off and all of that. That's all that's about is my experience. And I don't need to tell to harp on the hopeless predicament many don't realize the predicament they're in because no one could get that through to me. And if I try to scare a drunk into getting sober, they're just gonna walk away like I did, thinking you're a nut. You really are a nut, you know. And I'm not like that. When I get that bad, I'll stop, not knowing that I can't stop. And when they say, let him ask the question, that's an important thing for me too, because I want to give people way more information than they're asking for. If they're not going to ask, I need to back off. Because if I harp on something, it drives a wedge. It just stops. You know, the conversation stops, the blinds come down, and they kind of look at you like... And so I said, okay, now it's time to shut up now. But I do tell them exactly what happened to me. I had a psychiatrist tell me that I had the mind of a chronic alcoholic. And he told me I had to go to 5 meetings, or else he wasn't going to work with me. So I did what anyone would do. I fired him, you know. I'm not going back there. He ticked me off. So, you know, I don't do that to other people either. You know, I don't say you've got the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've been listening to you for an hour and it's wacko. I should say, you know, I'm wacko. I can only tell you that I'm wacko. When and this is what I think. This is what I did. And so the name calling had to be put aside, as much as I don't like to do that. And then this, the part when they talk about here, the man may be agnostic or atheist. Be emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. And I can remember telling my sponsor, but you don't understand. I don't believe in God. And they go, that's okay. That's okay. Will you just do these things? And, you know, like get on my knees and pray. And a lot of times I could have told you I'm praying to a blank wall. But I did it because I knew that if this didn't work, I was screwed. If this didn't, this was like the last block on the street, and if I couldn't do this stuff, there wasn't a chance. So when I did it, my experience changed. It's like if I'll take these actions, something in me changes. And I would pray, then all of a sudden, one day, I felt different. And it was like, oh, I'll be darned. I wasn't thinking about drinking all the time. My mind wasn't so wrapped up about how hard this was and poor, pitiful me. It was like, boy, I feel good today. What has changed? And the only thing I could say was I'd been praying. I'd been reading the book. I'd been calling. So when I took those actions, I wasn't the same person that came in here. Now, I do put the brakes on once in a while. But okay, and then the other part was, The main thing, he'd be willing to believe the power greater than himself and live by spiritual principles. God always puts something in front of me when I'm struggling with a concept that I refuse. I'm like that Herbert Spencer thing in the back, you know, contempt prior to investigation. I'm always contemptful of things. And I have this idea that I'm pretty smart. You know? So I was in Weight Watchers actually at the time, and there was this little blurb that said it was from Einstein. He said, the mind that creates the problem cannot find the solution on its own. And I thought, well, man, if Einstein believes that, why don't I? That was a turning point, though, because my mind had been opened up enough so that I could really hear something someone else was trying to tell me. It was just saying, you can't fix it. You broke it. You can't fix it. No? There you go, Abby.
As far as continuing to speak of alcoholism as an illness, the way that I was explained is that this is a direction that I'm to continue with as I'm going through the process with somebody, you know, not just in the beginning, because in the beginning, you know, I had that desperation and that hopelessness that, you know, this is going to kill me, absolutely. And then as I took more action, it started to kind of be put at bay, you know, and life was getting a lot better. And I forgot, you know, where this would take me and where I was when I walked in the door, you know, and how badly I wanted it to be over and done. So I was reminded that, you know, many times going throughout the steps, are you willing to go to any lengths? And that's why, you know, that's the answer to that question. You know, it's not just a fun little thing that we throw at people. It's because this is where we will end up. And I like the part that does say, explain that many are doomed to never realize their predicament, because there's nothing like, you know, losing somebody in this program, you know, no matter how close you are to them, you know, whether it be somebody in the program or, you know, outside that never made it into the rooms, to realize that you're so much like that person and now they're no longer here. You know, I had a sponsee this weekend that literally, you know, a couple days ago took a meeting up to the detox ward, and she called me a mess because, you know, one of the guys that she, you know, was talking with after the meeting had overdosed, you know, and even though she didn't know him really well, you know, it really brought it back, like, where this disease takes us, you know. And when I keep it focused mainly on my personal experience, you know, right off the bat, you know, I do explain to people, you know, how many people I've lost because of this illness, you know, that although there's a lot of happiness in this room, a lot of really great reasons to be sober, other than, you know, the fact that death was literally at my door. You know, I do have to continue to focus on that, you know, and I always go back to that faith without works was dead, that, you know, if I don't take this program seriously and enlarge my spiritual life, then I'm not going to be able to face the trials and low spots. And let's face it, you know, life is going to get lifey and have those low spots. So I need to keep this person's focus on that. And as far as stressing the spiritual feature freely, the next paragraph talks about the fact that when dealing with this person, you better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. And I wasn't even agnostic or atheist, and I didn't like anybody's conception of God. You know, I believed in God. I had my own understanding of God, and I didn't want to talk about your weird higher power God. You know, the idea of a higher power instead of saying, like, Lord Jesus Christ was terrible for me when I got here. And the funny thing was I wasn't even that religious. You know, it was just like, it was that last shred of, like, something that I held on to. It was like my, you know, the card that I'd pull out, like, I'm a whatever religion, so that I still looked good. But God forbid, you know, that you guys talk about this very, you know, flowy, hippie, spiritual kind of thing. So I needed to hear that, like, very everyday language and have it broken down, because my first sponsor, I would just sit and argue how everything that she was saying was going against my church and that I wasn't going to do this. And I had the biggest resentment at this woman for years that I talked to after a meeting, and I was really miserable. And she asked me what my prayer life looked like, and I thought that was really offensive, because that's a very private matter, you know. and I told her that I was praying every Sunday on my knees in church, because now that I was sober, I was going to be a very religious good girl. And she laughed at me, and I was so pissed off about that for years. And now, obviously, I understand why she thought that was so funny. But I really, you know, I needed at that time, that main thing was just that I'd be willing to believe in a power greater than myself. You know, I too, you know, was of the intellectual type that, you know, had a lot of knowledge about religion and God, because I was forced to go to religious education. It's not like it was my own doing. But I was willing to believe, you know, I understood that by going through this book, that the problem was that I have a lack of power. You know, that made sense to me, that, you know, I could not run my own life any longer. You know, the unmanageability part of this, got it, you know, the powerless part, got it. So I was willing to believe and do the things that you guys suggested. And like Jill described, you know, by not just praying on Sundays and doing everything the way that I'd always done it and just doing a few simple other things. I remember when I first started saying the Serenity Prayer, I'd never even heard of the Serenity Prayer before I got here. And I remember the first time I went in the break room, and I was probably, like, you know, 60 days sober, freaking out about something. I remember what happened. I put a glass on a shelf and it shattered, and I shattered and I just started crying. I was just stressed. And new, and just didn't think that I could handle living sober. And I remember I snuck in the break room, called my sponsor, and she said, you know, do you have a place where you can pray quietly? And I remember going into the supply room and saying the Serenity Prayer, and that, like, it was magic. You know, nothing like that had ever happened before. You know, I was able to go out and carry on with my day instead of just giving up like I always did, you know. And I started doing that a little bit more and a little bit more. So the main thing was that I was willing to believe, to do the things you guys had suggested, and to live by spiritual principles, you know. And at that time, spiritual principles for me were, like, really simple things, you know, like not, like, being kind to people, putting my hand out no matter what you look like or who you were, you know, listening instead of talking, like very simple things. And that's what my first sponsor, I'll always be so grateful for her, because she really dumbed it down for me, that spiritual principles were like doing the opposite of what I really wanted to do, you know. And the longer I was sober, the more I could add to that. But in the beginning, I was really glad that this was stressed so freely, you know, because I hear a lot of meetings talking about how it's all about just helping other people, going to meetings, and, you know, the God stuff will come later. But, you know, the 2 and 3 are placed where they are for good reason. You know, the God stuff has to come first before I can get any further, you know. And before I took that third step prayer, I had this different kind of understanding of God than I had brought in with me, you know, and I desperately needed that in order to continue with the rest of the steps, you know. My relationship with God is different today than it was back then, but I'm really grateful that right off the bat, I had sponsors that stressed the spiritual feature freely, you know, not to scare any of the newcomers, you know, that come in this door, you know, because this is the last house on the block, you know. So if you're not comfortable hearing the God thing, then, you know, this isn't going to work. You know, I have to be willing to take whatever you're putting out. So.
We're running a little bit short, so we'll just kind of...
Do you want me to just start on the night?
Start with page 100.
100?
Whoops, up here. Turn it up. Okay, I'll read. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in a path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When you look back, you realize that things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything that we could have planned. Follow the dictates of the higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstance. I always thought I had to figure everything out before I could do it. And this program has taught me slowly and surely. You suit up, you show up, and you kind of address what's put in front of you. And that's God kind of running our lives. And it doesn't need a whole lot of interference from me because I'm a real big organizer. I love to organize you, me, and everything else. And my sponsor used to call it herding ducks. And if you ever notice that people, if you try to herd a duck, they just kind of all scatter and you get frantic and you wind up stepping on them and make a big mess. Well, that's like me trying to run my life. I'm herding ducks. So what this has done is to have me take my hands off my life, that death grip I've had on everything in my life, and just take the next right action and see what happens. That's what I have.
This is a really good way to sum up, you know, all of this reading, because there's not just, you know, the promises. You know, we started off with like this life will take on new meaning. You know, there's all these things that we get to watch other people experience, you know, that you're not going to want to miss, like these life events, you know, that I'm able to show up for today. But these are like kind of the promises for me, you know, as a sponsor, you know, that both you and the new man must walk day by day, you know, in the path of spiritual progress. And it talks in the book about, you know, making a friend, you know, that we're walking shoulder to shoulder. And that's probably one of the best parts about this deal for me is, you know, getting to know somebody from the inside and out. You know, I feel like the relationship I have with sponsees are closer than they are with my family, you know, because I've watched these people take some really hard suggestions. You know, I can't change my mom, my sister, my family, but I can watch this person walk through this process with them. And because of that, that's what makes it a little bit easier for me to turn everything over. You know, I watched my sponsees and my friends make these decisions, take spiritual action, and I watched them come in here really broken and everything start to get better. So no matter what's going on in my life, or it says no matter what your present circumstances, you know, if I keep doing this, you know, if I keep showing up, I mean, there's literally been times I've sat down with sponsees and thought, driving to their house, like, everything I know about staying sober has fallen out of my head. You know, I don't know how I can be helpful to this person today. We sit down, we clasp hands, and suddenly God is present, you know, and that power is kind of just flowing between us, and we both walk away, you know, with a little bit lighter of a step, you know, and no matter what's happening in my life right then and there, that's the stuff that makes me able to keep going. And this is, you know, if you persist at this, remarkable things will happen. And when I look back, I do realize that the things that come to me when I put myself in God's hands, when I keep showing up for you guys, you know, when I come and speak even though I haven't been coming to meetings and I don't feel like I have it all together, you know, when I do those things, remarkable things happen that, you know, I couldn't otherwise explain. You know, I make these decisions based off of prayer, quiet meditation. It may not look right to other people, but the end result is always what God had planned, you know? And that's the powerful stuff that really can't be explained unless you have walked through it, you know? And I'm just really grateful that I have the opportunity to do that every day, and that I have persisted, you know? And I love, you know, what the 12 step says. It says we tried to carry this message to alcoholics, you know? There's been a lot of failures. A lot of people I've worked with are not sober, you know, but I've stayed sober, you know, and I've persisted, and my life has gotten better because of it. So I'm really grateful. Thanks.
Okay. We've got two last small paragraphs that I'm going to read, and they really speak for themselves. This is on page 100. It says, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures with show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We must not think or be reminded of alcohol at all. Our experience is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance of sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. But even there, Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin the whole thing. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. You know, it's like in the book before... I think it's page 84 and 85, it talks about the problem's been removed. It doesn't exist. And that's the important part about me. I don't think about it anymore. And I don't longingly watch people pour a drink or anything like that. It's like it's been taken out of me by this higher power. And if I'm still struggling with it, it means that I'm being very dishonest about something. And I always think about that because when I would have drinking dreams when I was getting sober at times, and a lot of those drinking dreams were brought on because I was being very dishonest about something, and my mind would automatically go to the escape that I knew so well, which was drinking. So even there, that showed me the thought comes before the action. That's all I have. Did you want to share on that a little?
The only thing I'd say is, you know, it says assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do, and I think that's the most important part for me, assuming we are spiritually fit, because I can, I'm still full of a lot of self-delusion, and I can assume that I am spiritually fit to go and deal with, you know, family that drives me absolutely bonkers, that are a bunch of drunks. And, you know, 10 minutes into it, I am not as spiritually fit as I thought I was walking in that door. Or, you know, if my motives are wrong in doing something. So I'm grateful that the obsession has been removed from me, but I really need to check that with somebody else to make sure that I'm not the only person that's gauging my spiritual fitness. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, that ends our... study for this evening, but we've got a little bit of business to take care of. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. The baskets I'm going to pass around are for the seven traditions, which states every group should be self-supporting. And the money goes to pay for the facility, coffee, and goes up the AA structure. At this time, they actually had this written out for us, so this is great. I'm going to read it. While contributions cover each group's rent and expenses, the seventh tradition, essentially at every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of the contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Amen. Here tomorrow, Wednesday the 26th, Muskegon is having our 33rd anniversary meeting. Excellent food will begin at 6:30, and an even better speaker will begin at 8. That's Wednesday, June 26th, 6:30 p.m. Cross Princess Anne, Cross Hampton Boulevard on Princess Anne.
Okay. Simple actions. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Jason, I'm calling. This home group is going to be having supper and a speaker on Monday, July 8th. 6 p.m. potluck meeting, 7 p.m. open speaker, and it will be in this room. Nathan C. from Washington, D.C. If you have any questions about it, please see me after the meeting.
Okay. Any other? Yes.
It's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
The new meeting in Key Beach, Sunday at 7 o'clock p.m. It's at 7 o'clock. It's on Saturday night, on the actual beach, to check out the entrance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Greg, I'm an alcoholic. I still have some tickets left, some raffle tickets for the Oceanfront Conference. So if you want some tickets, I have some. If you don't buy them, I will probably win this raffle, so please buy them.
Okay. Very good. Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would all home group members raise a hand? Okay, newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves with their first name? This is not to embarrass you, this is to get to know you. Are there any newcomers?
Amy,
welcome.
My name is George, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, George. Welcome. Okay. There is literature available. The pamphlets, there's a few pamphlets on the back table and some flyers. Those are free. There's a book back there, and that has a small cost. There's not a book back there. Sorry. We sold the book. So we'll have some more next week. Okay, sponsorship. This is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anybody willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. This is the key to the whole thing. Made me accountable and made me want to desire to be sober. And in closing, I want to thank everybody who participated tonight. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the steps outside to discuss the topic we talked about tonight. All are also welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which is going to be at, I forgot the name of it.
Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial.
Perfect, perfect. Now, I need a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. David.
I'm not calling. My name is David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Okay. We've got a great way of closing for anyone who would care to join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Keeps us sober.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom.